Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Oh, hello, Internet, and welcome to Season 237, Episode 5 of the Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It's Friday. It's fucking Friday. Thank you, Satan. May 20th, 2022. It's NASCAR Day, if you so take in that kind of thing. It's also International Red Sneakers Day. I don't know what that means. And also, National Rescue Dog Day. Shout out your rescue dog. Shout out my dog, Rimby. Rescued him.
Like, oh, hell yeah.
So good since that rescue. My name is Miles Gray, a.k.a. Miles's eyes are 20/10. He can see better than Miles's eyes are far too good. He can see better than you. Okay, shout out to, who was that? Melisande and also Tal Marion on the Discord, because yes, I got the LASIK. Yes, my vision is 20/10. Yes, I'm seeing shit on the moon. That's just how it is. So thank you for, you know, honoring that in the form of song. And today I'm thrilled to be joined by my guest co-host. You know, one of my favorite homies to get on the mic with. You know, somebody who's a hilarious comedian, a writer, an actor, the iconic podcast, Pod Yourself, a Gun the Sopranos podcast, is in its final season. Because
that's right.
It's a watch-along show. There's only so many things you can talk
about. There's a finite amount.
Exactly. It's the final season, the final countdown. Please welcome today's guest co-host, Matt Leave.
Hey, don't stop. Matt. Matt Leben, hold on to that Matt Leben feeling. That's a shout out to both myself and the final episode of The Sopranos, which we're going to be covering next week.
Nice.
Yeah, man. I'm so glad.
And he died.
That's a question, isn't it? It just goes black. Screen goes black.
Okay. When you watched that last episode of Sopranos, what did you do?
I hit my fucking TV and I called my cable provider. Thing?
Yeah, yes. I did that too.
The whole world did the same thing.
No way.
They hit their TV and they were like, no, fuck. And then they saw the credits come up and they're like,
and they're
this
like,
is,
what?
This is impossible that David Chase and HBO would end the greatest series of all time with a prank is the most insane thing that you can possibly think of for an ending, but that's what they did. And you know what? God bless them.
God bless them
for doing that, because there's something about disdain for your fan base that I that speaks to me and my soul. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like you don't let the fans control your art. You mm-hmm. control your art, and you let the piggies lap it up. Exactly. That's what I say. So good for David Chase ending the show with a prank.
Let the piggies lap it up. Isn't that what Rembrandt said?
That's what Rembrandt once said. Yeah. Exactly. Uh-huh. That was what Oscar Wilde once said.
Well, guess who we've got in our third seat?
Who?
Finally, this person is coming to the stage, the metaphorical stage.
Yes.
Somebody who I've known for a minute, and I was like, why are we, you need to come on Daily Zeitgeist. Well, the planets so happen to align, and today's guest is a wonderful human being who loves to share his infinite knowledge with the people and make things, maybe the most complex things, much easier to understand. Maybe take something you like and may have straight up fucking ruined it for you. Who knows? You may know him from the show Adam Ruins Everything. I know I do. You may have known him from the College Humor days. Or maybe you turned on Netflix today and you saw, what is this? The G Word with Adam Conover? Okay. I guess that is today's guest. Please welcome the brilliant Adam Conover.
Hello. Oh my gosh. It's so wonderful being here. What an introduction. Incredible.
Straight off the dome. What do you expect? How are you, man?
I'm doing pretty good. The show just came out. I'm like, this podcast is a nice break from me name searching on Twitter to see what people are saying about the show, which I'm going to be doing for the next week.
Are you really searching your own name like that? Or just to kind
of
see the vibe?
Of course I am.
Who doesn't?
Of course. Who doesn't do that?
There's not a person in the world who does not name search themselves, who has even the smallest public persona.
I'll tell you this. I did it. When I had a YouTube channel, I used to do it, and I couldn't. I got so in my own head reading other people's words about me. I was like, "Oh, this doesn't help me at all." So I've like cauterized that part of my ego.
It's terrible.
Doesn't respond to that.
Good for
it's
you.
It's terrible. And there are many times that I have cut myself off from doing it, and I have stopped doing it. But right now, the show is coming out.
Yeah,
and I'm also specifically, honestly, trying to build more on social. I'm doing TikTok. I'm on a TikTok diet. I'm making myself make TikToks every day.
Oh, God.
Because I'm good on there. My shit works on TikTok. And I'm like, fuck, now I have to invest time in TikTok because if I do, I will become measurably more famous. And so I like have to spend time on there. And so I'm just having to do it. At some point, I'm going to have to detox. But you want to know the sickest thing I do? This is not even what I'm here to talk about. You want to know the sickest thing that I do?
You know I do. Yeah,
obviously.
I will search. You know how people, when they want to talk about someone, but they don't want that person or their fans to find it out, and they'll put stars in the person's name?
You're doing permutations?
I name search myself with the stars in to see if people are talking shit about me when trying to not find out that I am. And guess what, you fucking anime avatars, you furries. It's people on the deep part of Twitter who are doing this. And they're not saying anything. People almost never have that strong of an opinion about me that they want to do that. But yes, I'm a true name search sicko right now. Hopefully in a month I can take a break and stop doing it.
Yeah.
I say keep it going, dude. Keep it going.
Yeah, keep it going. We might as well.
You got to know what the piggies are saying about you. That's the thing.
Yeah, slop, slop.
I mean, I'm a stand-up comic. You know, a stand-up comic, you expose yourself to the audience's judgment, whether they laugh or not. So that's what got me into this in the first place. Mm. And so name searching on Twitter is the closest you get on social media to seeing if you got a laugh. You know?
I put a Google alert of myself that I've had on for years now. And it was, there's this other Matt Lieb who's like a really good high school athlete. And he gets a lot of press, and I'm getting kind of tired of his ass.
What sport does the famous Matt Lieb play?
I think he was playing baseball.
I was going to say, that sounds like a baseball name. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. There's no Matt Lieb.
Matt is just like yeah. You're a baseball player.
Number one draft pick of the NBA, Matt Lieb. Yeah.
I have that too. There's a guy, an Adam Conover in, I think, Iowa, who is like a champion pig raiser. Like, he was a high school student who was winning competitions, blue ribbons for his pigs. And I followed his whole career because I would get alerts for him. And then eventually he joined, like, the pork board of Iowa or whatever. And now he's, like, a big muckety-muck in the pork raising industry.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, good for that Adam Conover, I say.
That's kind of I really like that Adam Conover, I got to say. I mean, just the raising pigs is that alone.
Well, he's raising them to kill them. This man has killed a lot of pigs.
Well, sometimes you got to kill the pigs, man.
This is how it boils down. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we're going to get to know you better, Adam. Going to talk about the new show. We're going to obviously talk about, just some things you've been looking into. But first, we got to tell the listeners what we're going to be talking about today on this Friday. First, just wanted to, the continued disconnect between legislators and workers continues. But in this context, talking about the pandemic and everyone insisting like, well, hospitalizations are low, that's fine. Completely unaware or just ignorant of the fact, what is actually happening with healthcare workers? What is the last 2 years? What has that been like that for them? And maybe our system is already like past the point of being strained. But again, we use these interesting metrics to soothe ourselves. So we'll look a little bit past that and look at the human reality of that all. We'll also obviously got to talk about the Freudian slip of the fucking century from George Bush 2. Because my goodness.
Oopsie.
Yeah, seriously. I'm 75.
A million dead Iraqis.
Hey, man. War crimes are there's a statute of limitations if you're 75 and slip up. Okay, so that. And we'll also talk about a fucking new research study that's come out that I want to just used to dunk on my mom and all my teachers who told me video games will rot my brain. Okay, studies showing it actually can increase intelligence.
And more we'll get into, brain.
Yeah, exactly. What that is and what that isn't. But first, we got to ask you, Adam, what's something besides your name and all the permutations using asterisks have you been searching recently?
Oh, my God. Here's the thing. That was what I was going to use for the answer to this question because I saw that they said, hey, you got to be ready with a Google search. I'm like, well, I name search. And then I happened to just drop it too early and ruin my entire answer to this question. I have once again ruined myself.
What the hell do I search? Else?
Here's my problem. I don't use Google. I use DuckDuckGo DuckDuckGo does not remember your search history.
Okay, so, think back. Come on, this is a good thought experiment.
All right.
Thing you DuckDuckGo'd?
I'm going to look it up directly. I'm going to find out exactly what it was. Okay, I'm working on the literal last thing I searched for was I'm working on a pitch for a new television show. I can't talk about what that is, but for the pitch document, I had to write in some funny trivia team names. It's a game show is the idea. Okay. We're pitching a game show. And there's going to be teams and they're going to pick names for themselves. And so for the pitch document, I was like, well, give me a list of funny trivia team names. And I found like a whole just like SEO shit pile of like websites you would not believe would have trivia team name lists. Parade.com, scarymommy.com. And they're just full of shitty, really terrible, offensive, racist. Like trivia team names for if you have for pub trivia, you're like, I need to come up with a funny name. And there's all these fucking lists. That was literally the last thing that I searched for. And
you were trying to get like inspired.
Yes, I was trying to get inspired. I was trying to rip off the work of some unfunny people for my pitch document.
I love idea that there's people like, all right, the winner is the greedy Jews again. I don't know why you guys insist on naming your team the greedy Jews, but they're really good at trivia.
No, it's spelled juice. And like, oh,
the previous thing I searched for, to give you one more, was I was trying to find the most effective climate charity. And I was looking for websites that evaluate climate related, charities, because I was looking at my charitable giving and I was trying to figure out what climate group I wanted to donate to. And I was trying to find that.
Did you find a good one?
Yeah.
I found some pretty good recommendations. The recommendations from a group called givinggreen.earth, which tries to use metrics to figure out which are the most effective. Their recommendations are, let me pull them up. There's one called Evergreen Collaborative. They used to recommend Sunrise Movement, and I'm a fan of Sunrise Movement. And so I was starting to dig into their criteria. Why are they no longer recommending Sunrise Movement? Why are they now recommending these other groups? And then I was like, wait, I have actual work to do. I can research this later. And I closed the
tab.
Right. And that's what I did earlier today.
I like that.
Are these good answers or is this extremely boring? Yes. You've learned something about me.
Exactly. Okay, we learned that you look, guys, if you want to fuck with Adam Conover, just start doing some bullshit tweets with his name.
Yeah. write some random shit and put all the asterisks you want. He will find you.
He will figure it out.
Yeah.
He will,
I'll try. Let's do an asterisk on the second A. Let's do an asterisk on the first A. Yeah.
Right.
Every single permutation. Like 9 factorial.
Exactly. Man, that luckily you got that legendary hairline, Adam, because they might start calling you Adam Comover if shit went south.
Yeah. Whoa.
But you're all right.
It's creeped up a little bit, but I don't think it's going any further.
Look, I saw you in person, man. I was looking dead at your hairline the whole time. I was like, God damn it. He's still got it.
Yeah, you do have magical hair.
Thank you.
It's crazy.
It's my one feature.
It's wild. the one thing you got going for, I mean, aside from all the other great things done, but yeah, man, what's something you think is overrated, Adam?
Oh my God. Something I think is overrated. The first, it's so cliche of me to say this, but I used to enjoy the Marvel movies. I used to like them. And I finally saw the Spider-Man movie and I was like, this is what people were excited about. That Dr. Octopus from the previous movie showed up. I enjoyed seeing Dr. Octopus, but then he had nothing to do in this movie. He just stands around and goes, I'm mad to be in a cage. And that's about it. And then the other two Spider-Mans show up. We got two other Spider-Mans.
Yeah.
And they just stand around doing shtick. Like they're just doing fucking a duo comedy act. And like, that's it. And they do that for 45 minutes. They just stand around in a living room and go you're Spider-Man? Hey, blah, 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 blah. And they just do fucking banter.
I clapped the whole 45 minutes. I clapped whole time because that's Spider-Man from all Spider-Mans. Do you remember? Remember first Spider-Man, Adam?
It's the meme. It's the meme where they point at each other.
They point each other.
Yeah.
So I mean...
It's like turning the little bit of fan service that's fun into the whole movie. That's not a whole movie. The movie itself had no story whatsoever. The story was Peter Parker is upset that his friends didn't get into the school of their choice.
Yeah.
And so he went and bothered Dr. Strange. He just was being annoying at Dr. Strange and then caused a big tragedy. In a story, you want the problem to be caused by the character's fatal flaw, right? Whatever their character problem is, and then that causes the story to start, and then they have to work through that flaw in order to solve the problem.
Well, in this case,
the problem was caused by Peter Parker can't shut up for 30 seconds. Great. Nice little bit of comedy. But that's what caused the whole thing? Hey, there's no story. Instead, they're just like, hey, look, we got Andrew Garfield. Oh, wow, you got Andrew Garfield. I'm so fucking impressed.
He was self-aware. He knew that his Spider-Man was worst Spider-Man. So it was fun because he knew.
Was it fun?
I don't know.
I was on a 10-hour flight and it ate up 2.5 hours of the flight. And so I'm not mad at it for that reason. But
in your mind, you're like, you could have, what would you like to have seen? If you're directing it, you got three Spider-Mens.
You have endless Spider-Mans. What would you make?
Yeah. Are they fighting together?
I wouldn't have made that the new Spider-Man movie. They just did that into the Spider-Verse. They just did it. They just did the multiverse and other Spider-Mans show up. And now they're doing that again. And then the new Doctor Strange movie is, again, we're doing multiverse. These motherfuckers made the same movie 3 times. What is going on?
Right.
The Marvel movies at their best, what I'm impressed by was when they surprise you with what they're doing. Like the first Taika Waititi Thor movie. Oh, wow. That felt original and fresh. I still have concerns about, the overall consolidation and media control of creativity that great. People are exposed to Taika Waititi, not in his original work, but in his, in his use of Thor. Right. But hey, at the very least, I was like, oh, wow, this has a lot more character. This is interesting compared to all the other Thor movies. Right.
Right. At least they let him make a movie with his own artistic choices. Whereas I don't think they've let a single director do that since.
Well, you know what they did was Rian Johnson with The Last Jedi. Right.
Oh, that was great.
I enjoyed that movie. If someone else says they don't enjoy it, I have no problem with that. But at the very least, Rian Johnson was empowered to make choices in the movie, right? Mm-hmm. And to like do some shit. And then he made that movie and they were like, no, we don't want people to do that anymore. And they were like, everything exactly, that he said didn't happen. It all was, some people, there was a wormhole and none of that happened. And Rose Tico, she doesn't exist. She was shot in the head. She doesn't exist anymore. and now, okay, and all your friends, they all show up at the end and Chewbacca's there and everybody shows up to help at the end. Is that good? No. And nobody liked that either.
Right. Well, that's the thing is that the problem is, and I've said this before, I'll say it again. Don't listen to the piggies. The piggies are there to eat the slop. They are not there to judge the slop. They're there to eat the
Throw
slop.
Throw the slop out.
Exactly. And I'm tired of it, of like people being like, oh no, the piggies are mad. We should make the slop more to their liking. Yeah. It's like, they're never all going to agree on the slop. They're pigs.
They need to find that, like, their inner Will Ferrell in that dog food sketch from SNL when he's like, oh, that's right. You're a fucking dog.
Exactly. Who gives a shit?
That is so the best take on this I've ever heard. That is the best take on this I've ever heard.
The pigs are running the slop house.
The pigs are running the slop. This is why I live by that. I'm so, like, that's why I like The Sopranos. David Chase, he said, fuck you, piggies. We're just going to end with a prank.
Well, I think that's a bigger discussion about art, right, too, is like there's some artists who clearly express their artistic vision, and that's what they do. They said, here's my work. Respond to it, react to it how you will. Others are clearly making art as a response to what they see and how an audience is going to take that in.
Right.
And that's typically not the kind of art that is the most, you know, impactful. You know, usually these true expressions of artistry that wow people, like Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah,
there you go.
Like that. And people are like, wow, look at that. I don't think the piggies are running that slop house.
No, they're not.
They just did that shit and everyone's mind was blown. So,
yeah.
There's something
you guys see the new Matrix, the new Matrix?
Yeah.
This is the perfect counterexample because the new Matrix is Lana Wachowski saying, here is what the fucking movie was about. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you, this is what I was trying to do. And I'm going to have a direct conversation with you, the audience. Hey, remember you? Remember this movie I made? Remember this movie? Like, you loved this movie, didn't you? I loved making the movie. But hey, guess what? We're 20 years older now, right? Yeah. Things are looking a little bit different. And a lot of people misunderstood the movie. But here's what it was actually about. And here are my thoughts on it now. And I'm going to share. And here's my thoughts on the fact that I'm making this fucking movie at all.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of bullshit that I'm even making this. But you know what? Here's what I believe about the world. And here's what I believe about life. And this is my statement. And she said that so directly. I've never felt a director more. I've never felt more on the same page with the director where they were like, here's what I'm about. And I was like, I hear what you're about. I see it. Thank you for telling me about it. And you know what? That movie didn't do as well as it needed to. They gave her so much money to make that movie, and it did not make the money back. And thank God, thank God that that's what happened, because that's how it should be. We want messy auteurs. When people, you know, everyone now is reevaluating the Star Wars prequels and saying, "Oh, the George Lucas prequels were better than what we are getting now," and. Mm-hmm. The reason is George Lucas completely forgot how to make a movie when he was making those. He was like, how do you make a fight scene? I don't know. He just forgot. But at the very least, it was just one weird dude and his weird ideas, you know, going nuts, going like, I want a, you know, Jamaican parody character and I want like all this horrible shit. But at the very least, it was unique. You know what I mean? And it was lumpy. It was it was an auteur going nuts. And that's what we want. We don't want all this, you know, like over-focused tested shit, you know?
Right. You want to be able to, watch a film and almost be like, from the feel of it, be like, oh, it's this director.
Yeah.
Oh,
yes, this writer, absolutely.
You know, and now so many times you look, I'm like, there's such a lack of like discerning traits in a lot of like mainstream cinema that you're like, I don't know.
It's That's
like
why The Room is like so another good.
2 hour long thing.
Like, The Room is like one of the worst movies ever made. And it's so wonderful to watch because you know it's coming direct from this guy's warped mind.
Yeah.
And it's like, at least it's that. It's not this like mass produced, you know, thing. He's not trying to make a general audience do anything but like see his weird thoughts. And they're bad. Right. And it's wonderful.
And I think that's why, Demolition Man, I always point to that. Marco Brambilla, the director of that, is an artist. He's a visual artist. Mm-hmm. And that was the one film he made, but because the studios were trying to like get butt in on everything, he's like, I'm an artist. What the fuck are you doing? This is the movie I'm trying to make. And then they're like, all right, well, Demolition Man was pretty cool. You want to do another one? He's like, no, I never want to make a film with people again because I'm an artist. And now he does like amazing visual, like video installations that are fucking breathtaking. Like if you're ever, I always talk about it, if you're ever at the Standard in New York, if you look in the elevators, you'll see like this animated thing of like stitched together film clips as you go up or down the elevator. They're either ascending to heaven or descending into hell. That's a work of Marco Brambilla's, but it's usually done on a much larger scale. Like he's doing like, you know, 30 foot by 16 foot high, like video projections that are in 3D that are absolutely ridiculous. So if you ever have the chance to encounter any of his work, absolutely check it out and be like, yeah, that fucking guy made Demolition Man and called it quits. So moving on, underrated. Adam, what's something you think is that you think is underrated?
I probably should not go on at such great length about these things because it's, you know, you have a lot of show to get to and I'm ranting and raving.
This is the show. We're talking. We're chatting. Okay. People want to hear from you.
Thank God. What is underrated that I really enjoy? It's just because I'm in the middle of watching it right now. Mm-hmm. Better Call Saul is better than Breaking Bad. Better Call Saul is a better show than Breaking Bad than it ever was. It's subverting Breaking Bad in a really interesting way. The characters are much more interesting. It surprises you at every turn. They're really deep into it now. Like a tenth as many people are watching it as watch Breaking Bad. But like the whole Walter White thing, let's be honest, kind of sucked. Not that interesting. It was all the other stuff that they were doing on the show that made it special. And they're doing it all on Breaking Bad. It makes... like Better Call Saul makes like the worst asshole of America, suburban like Arizona or no, New Mexico, excuse me, suburban New Mexico looks so interesting. And I love it. Incredible production design, incredible performances. I would kill for Kim Wexler. The end.
Yes.
I'm only up to episode 4. So if something bad happens to Kim Wexler, don't tell me.
Okay. And don't write it in a review of the Netflix show either to try and
don't
spoil it for Adam.
Which I will find out. Do not put it in add star M, C star Nover. Adam Kim Wexler dies. Don't fucking tell me that.
Don't say that. Yeah. I think it was like, I remember when it first came out, I was all in because I liked Breaking Bad.
Right.
And then I was like, damn, this has got like, we're getting some real depth now. Behind everybody. Like before you're like, man, look at Odenkirk. He's a hilarious scumbag. Saul Goodman in Breaking Bad. And then you're like, fuck. Okay. Like really giving
us a much darker
backstory character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The best episodes are just him doing lawyer stuff. Like there's a bunch of episodes where it's just like somebody's got a problem. And it's like, I would love to see the version of Better Call Saul that's just a lawyer procedural show where it's just like a scummy defense attorney like gets people off and it's just Law and Order style. No arc. You know, because that's really entertaining to me is just seeing him like, you know, try to help people in a somewhat selfish way.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Good one. I like that one. Yeah. I haven't started the latest season yet, but because I get like really impatient and I've always waited for the season to end so that I can just fly right through it. Because that's
I do the same thing. Because I know I'm going to binge and there's nothing worse than.
Hitting that wall.
Yeah, you hit that wall and you're just like, what do I do with my day?
Yeah.
And then you can't find the thing to do with your day.
And my
now
luck
that
is
Severance
always...
is over, I'm like freaking out. I need more Severance in my life.
Whenever I binge a live show, my luck is always the last episode I watch is like the day after it aired and I fully have like 1 week to wait until then. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
How? Why this fucking timing is like this? All right. Well, yeah. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back to talk about these news things.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now. now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
And we're back. The continued disconnect between the people who make the laws and the humans who have to do the work continues, because we constantly hear about how the, you know, the pandemic actually isn't that bad anymore right now.
It's over, dude. Didn't you hear?
Chill.
You can take your mask off in planes. You can yell at people wearing masks. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. Do what you got to do. And, you know, again, the message is sort of like, there's nothing to fear. Nothing's going on. Sure, we don't know much about long COVID or haven't really funded the pandemic response to this point, but it's all to the G. Y'all just trust we. And the main thing that they point to is that, oh, you know, hospitalizations aren't going up. That's a good thing. Case numbers may be going up, but the thing we're really looking at are hospitalizations, because the last thing we want to do is overload the hospitals and cripple the healthcare system. And we don't want to overwhelm the people that are working there. Well, even though that figure may hold in some places, there also we're starting to see hotspots in the U.S. where hospitalizations are increasing. So as much as it's nice to remind ourselves of how low things may have been at a certain point previously, I think the biggest thing that is being missed, and Ed Yong at The Atlantic, who's, you know, won a, like a Pulitzer for his coverage on
the
COVID pandemic, really points to the fact is like, yeah, sure, you're talking about that. He's like, for people who are really looking at this situation, you're completely missing the point, which is the healthcare workers and where morale is and what that looks like, the state of the healthcare system. And the morale is absolutely, it's catastrophically low right now. I'm just going to read from Ed Yong's piece here. Quote, even in quieter periods, healthcare workers are scrambling to catch up with backlogs of work that went unaddressed during COVID surges, or patients who sat on health problems and are now much sicker. Those patients are more antagonistic, verbal and physical assaults are commonplace now. Healthcare workers can also still catch COVID, keeping them from their jobs, while surges elsewhere in the world create supply chain issues that keep hospitals from running smoothly. All this on top of 2 years of devastating COVID surges means that healthcare workers are so exhausted and burned out that those words have become euphemisms.
Ugh.
That's the state of the people who, like, are, you know, remember in the beginning of the pandemic, there were countless selfie videos of stressed out healthcare workers on the front line saying, y'all, please, this is not a fucking game.
Yeah. And
please
and Miles,
take care of yourself.
Miles, I went outside every single day with my pots and pans.
Yup.
And I bang those motherfuckers. All
right. Damn right.
So I don't know why you're getting on my ass now, because I did my part. I banged the pans.
It's not the pan banging, sir. We also said, as healthcare officials, please use social distancing. Please wear masks. And
I'm
also
not
get
doing
the
all
vaccine.
That shit. No, but I will slap my hands together at 7 every night for the healthcare workers or the Lakers, depending on which is on first.
Depending what time of the year is and if it's the postseason. Nope, never mind. So I guess I'm just clapping for the healthcare workers. And it's just a very, like, you know, many of us are doing the thing. We look at line graphs and we're like, yay, line go down.
Yeah,
or
line
like
down.
Line flat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sure, for right now. But many healthcare workers, they're still dealing with this 2-year nightmare they've experienced of constant traumatic experiences of counting or of zipping up countless body bags while screaming at the public and pleading with people. They're saying, you're not, y'all are living your outside world life, but the in-hospital world is a completely different one. And we're trying to get you to connect to the humanity of it all. But I mean, I like, he goes on in the article to talk about how disconnected a lot of healthcare workers feel from just the regular world. Like very similar to combat veterans, where they only feel that other people in healthcare actually understand the ordeal and how difficult it's been, when they're saying like, man, it's so easy. Like, and we're actually the ones that are going through a really hard time having to repeat this over and over again.
Yeah. No, it's really serious. But I have a little bit of a beef with how, especially on social media, people have the conversation about the pandemic is over. No, it's not, right? Because people who are going, oh, the pandemic's over, everything's fine, right? That's not true. There are still really serious problems, like, right? But there are also people who go, no, you're wrong. The pandemic's not over. How dare you go outside? How dare you spend time with your friends? Or how dare you go back to work, right? And they turn it back on individuals and they say, as individuals, you guys should be behaving differently. You should be social distancing like me. I still don't go to the park without wearing a mask, right? And I think that is the wrong thing to say, because the reality is, if you look at what public health experts, every public health expert said at the beginning of the pandemic, social distancing and, you know, staying away from other people, that was a way for us to buy time for the vaccines and for all the other treatments that we were developing, right? And no one thought that we could continue to, you know, social distance indefinitely. It's impossible to do. It's impossible to. It's not just like the fact that, oh, it would shut the economy down. It's literally people just simply will not do it. If you look at the public, if you look at public health, you have to look at what people will agree to do. And like, the public will not do it on a mass level. And so, you know, saying to people, like, just individually wagging your finger at people and saying, you shouldn't be going to the mall anymore. You know, like, you're having too much fun drinking with your friends, right?
Right.
Is really, really unproductive. We should be yelling at the people who have, you know, designed our healthcare system, the people in power who are letting these workers down. The fact that we have eviscerated, you know, our local public health departments, which is something we talk about on my new show, The G Word, out now on Netflix.
Nice.
it's like most, thank you. I'm good with the segue. We haven't mentioned the show in like 20 minutes, so I have to bring it up.
Oh, yeah.
We do a whole episode on what the U.S. fucked up about the pandemic. And the big silent thing that we fucked up that most people don't know is that we spent the last 30 years cutting the budgets of our local public health departments that could be providing support to all those healthcare workers. You know, we've broken the backs of the healthcare unions, of the nurses unions that would, you know, protect those workers and advocate for better conditions for them. All those sorts of things. The, you know, Congress won't pass a COVID relief bill. Those are the issues. But we have become so focused on individual behavior that even the folks who are reading Ed Yong's articles, right, we are often taking the wrong lesson and yelling at everybody else about their individual behavior rather than yelling at those in power about saying, you need to fix the systemic issues that are causing this. I'll get off my podium, but that's something that bothers me.
No, and that's absolutely correct, right? Because the way we talk about workers in this like abstract is the sort of like, man, shout out to the frontline workers, shout out to the heroes and things like that. But meanwhile, like, the attitude is almost like they want these people to have like near like mythical levels of grit.
Right.
Where they're like, shout out to you. We're going to fucking grind you down to dust. Shout out to their strength, without saying this whole situation is fundamentally fucked up. Like, you're while you insist on like thanking the healthcare workers to like hold the line, you're actually doing nothing that acknowledges the humanity of those people and the fact that they aren't invincible.
Right. Yeah.
They have limits, that people are leaving the profession, that veteran healthcare workers are leaving in higher numbers too because of just pandemic burnout. And that's creating a generational knowledge gap that other people who work in healthcare, like, it actually, it's wild when you don't have these veterans here, they can't pass that information on. And when they're replaced, it's usually with inexperienced people and things aren't going to run so smoothly because we'd have these, like, just these, the nuances of the continuity of people having their careers is completely gone out the window in service of like, well, whatever, man, these reckless policies that we do to please the Chamber of Commerce is just going to fall onto the healthcare workers, but they're okay. Shout out to their grit.
That's shout
out to the to all the firefighters out there as I'm lighting matches and throwing them in a dry brush.
You're like, oh, so brave. It's like, well, hold on. He's like, look, I got a brand to deal with Zippo. I got to throw 500 Zippo.
Yeah, I
got
to do this. Libo. The content needs to come out.
So the thing that is interesting, though, I was actually going to, you know, very naturally pivot to your show, Adam, like in the G word. Watching the first two episodes, the thing that I told you after watching it, I was like, man, I really like that you're humanizing what the government is, because we think about the government in this abstract and we just go, it's Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell. But those are two fucking people, you know, when so many people are employed by the federal government. And in, you know, the series is based on the Michael Lewis book, The Fifth Risk, Undoing of Democracy. And in it, what I think is really important is that people begin to understand that there are actual human beings doing all of this work day to day for a lot of the shit that we take for granted. And we get so caught up in this binary of like of Republican or Democrat sometimes that we also forget that like they're just people who are going out every day doing the simplest things, like checking that the meat that we eat isn't completely fucked up, or knowing, you know, how to alert people to inclement weather.
Yep.
And, I mean, like, I'm sure for you being inspired to do the show, you saw that there is a need for, I guess, getting people sort of in touch with sort of how this relationship works.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole theme of the show, the whole purpose of the show is that we spend, you know, years, like 2 years every 4 years arguing about who's going to run the government. Almost none of us know anything about what the government actually does or the people that make it up. And so, like you say, healthcare workers, like the people who are inspecting our meat, we go to a Cargill meat processing plant and meet the folks who are there every single day checking your meat from the USDA. They're mandated to be there in the plant. They're standing there on the line and they're checking every single piece of meat that you eat to make sure that it's safe. And like, what are their lives actually like, you know? And what is it like to do that work? You know, USDA workers like got COVID at a massive rate because the, you know, the meat inspection workers were considered essential workers because we have to make sure the food supply keeps going. But they were in a very cold environment where, you know, they're indoors. It's a perfect environment for COVID to spread. And they all got COVID. And we're talking, you know, April and May of 2020, like way pre-vaccine. There were like serious outbreaks. A lot of people died.
Yeah.
But that is like a fundamental government service that was put into place, you know, at the beginning of the last century, or like 100 years ago, because people were dying left and right of poisoned meat all across America. And, you know, the
shout
government.
Out Upton Sinclair.
Upton, shout out to Upton Sinclair, my boy Upton. Incredible dude.
Shout out to Joe.
You know, Teddy Roosevelt passed the Federal Meat Inspection Act. It mandated the USDA had to have representatives in every single meat processing facility, and they check all the meat. They have a big button they can hit that stops the line whenever they see something that's wrong. And that's like a fundamental service that government provides that like most people don't know that it's doing. And people certainly don't know that like your fellow Americans are doing that work and they are in there so that you will be safe.
Yeah, like I had no idea of the people who like volunteer to help like keep our weather reports accurate.
And, yeah.
You know, how we're privatizing weather reporting. It's like in this fucked up way too. I mean, the show is really dope because you really dive into these things. And in the open, like for people who don't know, this is a co-production with Higher Ground, which is the Obama's production company.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, like, I'm not going to lie, Adam, I'm like, okay, so what does that mean for what you talk about? You know, because you have the idea of a ex-president who is making content and you're like, how critical is this going to be? How sober of an analysis will this actually be about the government? Mm-hmm. And there's, people should watch the opening, just watch the show, because you kind of address that up top, that there's really nothing off the table. And I was even like, what about drone strikes?
Mm-hmm.
Talking drone strikes in this Obama produced production.
And we do it. We do a segment on drone strikes in episode 4. And yeah, I mean, look, I knew. So here's how the show came about. Obama's company had optioned this Michael Lewis book, The Fifth Risk. I had read the book the previous year and I was like, this book's incredible. Like, I want to do stories about this. You know, I wish I could do this book as a TV show. And then like 6 months later, I get a phone call from my manager. Hey, President Obama optioned this book and they're looking for a comedian to adapt it. You want to go pitch what you would do? And I was like, hell yeah, I do. I went and I pitched The Angle. I want to do a, you know, a comedy investigation of all the things the government does, both good and bad. Introduce them to the people who make it work. Talk about systemic problems. And they said, great, let's do it. Netflix said, let's do it. And I, you know, but I had to say to them, hey, this is going to be a conflict. If people are going to know what's going on, the audience is smart, and they're going to be worried that like, hey, is this, could this possibly be impartial when a former president's name is, you know, executive produced by Barack Obama? And so I need editorial independence on the show. This needs to be my show, not Barack Obama's show. I'm not going to be saying what he wants me to say. I'm going to be saying where my investigation takes me. And they said, yes, that's you have that, right? You can do that. Like, fantastic. But now I need to communicate that to the audience. And right. So we wrote a whole scene at the beginning where I made that very clear. And specifically, I then looked for topics I would do that I knew people would think we would not be able to do, right? Mm-hmm. That's my approach to doing television. When I was on True TV, I did episodes that were about gigantic advertisers that people would say, hey, if advertisers are paying your salary, no way that you can you touch this on the show. And we went for those super hard. We also did entire episodes where we took apart the network's relationship with advertisers and how that affects the show and, you know, went really deep on it. And that to me is the best I can do. Well, I take the approach, you know, the cliche of, you know, your first night in prison, go punch the biggest guy in the nose. That's what I do is I say, what is the biggest fight that I can pick that will enable me to do shit that people think I won't be able to do? And then I'm going to go to the mattresses for it.
So you chose Obama, which is, that's pretty dope. I like that. Yeah. You're like, who am I going to punch in the nose? Obama's drones program.
Got Peach LaManna of the TV making out here. Exactly. Being like, rah, you motherfucker.
So yeah, we did a segment on drone strikes and how, you know, they went up 10 times in the Obama administration. That was when that program really went nuts. And it is an incontrovertible fact that it led to the deaths of many, many, many more civilians than would have been killed otherwise. And the mm-hmm. reason is that drone strikes present a moral hazard, that it allows, you know, those in power, going all the way up to the president, to order strikes that they would not order otherwise, because there's no risk to an American pilot because they're unmanned, right? You wouldn't send a bomber, you wouldn't send a fighter jet because you don't want, you know, Bobby from Ohio to crash land in, you know, Syria, but you would send an unmanned drone because you don't care as much. And so as a result, we end up using those weapons a lot more often, a lot more people die, and specifically a lot of civilians die. And you know, I did not work with Obama directly on the show, apart from his appearances. But the people who worked for him, who I worked with, were like, oh, are you sure you want to do that? And I was like, uh-huh, I do want to do that. And they were like, well, it's going to be pretty tough. And I was like, bring it. You know what I mean? Like, if you guys got a problem, you got to tell me. And, you know, but the thing is, everything that we talk about on the show is a completely mainstream analysis. We are using, you know, independently reported facts and figures, you know, from like fucking people who research military technology and research civilian deaths. And so they didn't honestly have anything that they could argue with. And, you know, it was made apparent to me that Barack Obama disagreed with our segment, but they knew they couldn't come to me and say, well, you can't do it.
Right.
Because then it would undermine the entire premise of the show. They were smart enough to know that, hey, we granted this guy editorial independence, so he has it. And as a result, we did the segment as scripted. And it's to their credit that they gave us space to do that, because they knew that, you know, this show, in order to be credible, needs that space to survive.
Right. Exactly.
So for that reason, I hope that people, when they watch it, see that. And by the way, we're very transparent about all of this on the show. I hope that gives people confidence in it. Yeah, that's the best we can do, making content under capitalism. The best you can do is fight as hard as you can and be transparent about your process with your audience and try to do it with integrity. And at the end, the audience gets to tell you whether or not you did a good job. But at the end of the day, that's how I sleep at night, is by knowing I fought as hard as I could.
Right.
Nice.
Well, I mean, it comes out in the show. So, yeah.
Thank
I
you, man.
Anybody who's interested, and if you've liked any of Adam's past work, there's no way you wouldn't enjoy this one.
Oh, government.
Yeah.
That's the G word.
Yeah.
I thought it was God. I was waiting for you to get there. I was like, when is this going to be about God, man? What the heck?
Dude, Obama.
I was like Obama, yeah, I get it, blah, blah, blah. And God.
And God?
Government is the other.
It's a little bit. Look, the title is the G word. We don't want to talk about it. No one likes to talk about the government. We're going to talk about it. That's the title. Yeah,
exactly. See, Matt's a little slow on the.
It takes me a little time. I like when there's more. How many Spider-Men are in the show?
That's episode
Andrew Garfield's
14,
there, and he's playing me from an alternate dimension, and he's like, "Oh, are you? I'm me. Oh, okay.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I'm
just
being
that.
A cutesy. Am I Spider-Man? Are you Spider-Man?
Do you guys look at the camera and wink at me? I hope you wink at me.
By the way, how funny was it? Just like Andrew Garfield is just, you know what he's doing? Is he's doing a Ben Schwartz impression. That's what he's doing. He's doing Ben Schwartz. I just realized that is what it is.
Handsome Ben Schwartz.
It is super Ben Schwartz. Tobey Maguire's trying to keep up. And he's just like, I don't know if he was on, if he took a Xanax or something. He's just sort of blissed out and like, hey guys.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Whoa. He's like, look, man, I've been gambling all night, man.
Yeah.
Fucking leave me alone.
He's like, me and Leo have just been having sex with models for the last 10 years. I don't know. Yeah, I'll do your Spider-Man in joke.
I've been inhaling vape smoke for 7 years straight like it was a fucking scuba tank. Fuck with me. All right. Speaking of presidents, gotta touch in really quick with George Bush the Two.
Wow.
My man. That brought hundreds of thousands of lives, basically killed, because this invasion killed hundreds of thousands of people.
Man, he's a goat, huh?
Untold death and destruction to an entire region. I mean, he knows a bad invasion when he sees one.
Uh-huh.
And when he was speaking recently at his own foundation, he really just, he just wanted to let people know he wasn't born yesterday. He sees what's going on. So let's just hear the president weigh in on what's happening around the world.
In contrast, Russian elections are rigged. Political opponents are imprisoned or otherwise eliminated from participating in the electoral process.
That doesn't happen in the U.S.
No.
The result is an absence of checks and balances in Russia, and the decision of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq. I mean, of Ukraine.
What?
Iraq, too. Anyway, 75.
Oh, boy.
Hundreds of thousands of fucking people died. But,
It's
rough.
That's the biggest punchline of all. All the dead Iraqis.
Like, what? That's a wild... I don't know. I mean, Ukraine. I don't know. Like, what was that weird line he grumbled after?
I think he said Iraq 2, which
75.
That leads me.
Iraq 2. Anyway.
Wait.
Iraq 2. Anyway.
Said Iraq 2.
Iraq 2. Yes.
Wow. Oh.
Which that leads me to believe that he's actually very self-aware that everyone, the person he was describing as like, you know, the decision of one man to unilaterally, you know, invade a country, like he knows that's him.
That's him.
He knows. He's very aware, and it very well may haunt his dreams, which makes me feel better about the about.
That was
everything.
What I got from this. My question to the panel now is, he haunted? Because I in my mind I thought he was buying aquifers up and shit like it was nobody's business, doing watercolors like he didn't absolutely fuck up a whole part of the earth.
I think that's why he does, you know, watercolors and paintings and shit. I think it's because he is haunted by it, because if there's one thing about George W. Bush that I, you know, in all fairness remember, rather than just like, yes, he's a war criminal, yes, he is legitimately the worst president of our lifetime, but he also was someone who didn't seem like necessarily a sociopath, but someone who seemed like he just desperately wanted to please the people around him.
Yeah. And I completely agree with that.
The guys he called uncle.
People he grew up with who just wanted to impress them, you know, people who literally ran all the gears of government, you know.
Yeah.
And I think when he was in office, he was just like, people around me are saying we got to go after Iraq,
Let's do it. Fuck
yeah. Colin Powell's here. Here's Dick. You know, yeah. They're all saying, okay, guys. I mean, if you were in that situation, maybe you would have said the same thing. If you had been born into where he, you know, if you put yourself through all that, not to defray his responsibility at all, but like, yeah, he's like, you know, sometimes when I watch him, I'm like, he's just kind of a sweet dumbass. You know, that's like, that's like why people, when they're like, oh, he's painting now, because you sort of see a little glimmer of a personality now that he doesn't have power.
Yeah, yeah.
However, it doesn't change the fact that he's like a, as you say, a war criminal.
Yeah. He is a war criminal, and he is, you know, like, for all the bad that Trump has done, it's like Trump never did a unilateral invasion of a country while he was president. Not that he wouldn't have loved to do it if there had been political will to do it.
Yeah.
He just happened to be, you know, the president at a time when people were so sick of going to war for no reason.
I mean, the invasion of Russia's invasion of Ukraine is, there is practically no difference to find between the United States invasion of Iraq, apart from the fact that the United States was not trying to literally like annex the country and make it a state. But apart from that, like, you know, I guess we just didn't finish the job. Like, we didn't make it a full colony. It was like, all right, now we're going to leave and you guys do whatever the fuck you want.
All right, everybody,
you
know, get their infrastructure contracts and pump their gas. All right, we're out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
On to the next one. But like,
yes, it was a unilateral invasion of a country, almost no international partners, right? Mm-hmm. A couple, Tony Blair, bring them along. But apart from that, you know, and it didn't cause as much of an outcry as Russia because we're more powerful, or we were more powerful at the time than Russia is now.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the only
supremacy was working in favor of that too, because it's only because the victims are European that suddenly they were like, these are war crimes.
This can't happen to white people.
Like,
what are you? No proper person could.
You could run the tape back like 16 seconds and find some cool stuff too that you could get outraged about. But that's
But George W. Bush, I find his post presidency interesting because I agree with you. He seems not traumatized, but just sort of like, I can't do it. Like, he doesn't, like, he seems like a broken man.
Yes.
He has this childlike demeanor versus, let me tell you about Obama a little bit, because I shot with Obama, right?
Yeah.
And to shoot with him, it's like, we had 1 hour in his schedule, and it was in his office in DC. And it's like, you know, the middle floor of this anonymous office building. And, you know, it's like, we had our crew of like 8 people, 10 people, who we were shooting with. And it's like, okay, you guys are going to, his people are like, okay, you're going to wait here in the lobby. And then at exactly 10:01, you're going to take the elevator upstairs. When you go upstairs, you're going to go down the hall. You're going to go in the room on the left, and you're going to stay in there. Make no noise, because he's on the floor. Okay. Then he is in the presidential office. He is going to walk down the hallway, and Adam, you will be standing in the hallway here. You will shake hands with him when it comes, and then you will enter the set where you will shoot.
Jesus.
And it was like his movements are being scripted around. Like, they were like, we don't want the crew. He's doing something else in the other room, and we don't want him to like the crew to like walk by him. You know what I mean? It's very much like to the point where like one of our PAs, this hilarious dude, Evans, wonderful dude, one of our PAs accidentally was in the hallway when President Obama walked in, and it was so impressed upon him that should not happen that Evans goes, oh shit, and runs away. Like, makes eye contact with him and is like, oh shit, and runs. But like, so he's living his life as though he's still the president, you know? Like, he's got, in addition to having Secret Service detail, it's just his movements are so scripted, right? George W. Bush is not living this way.
No.
You know?
No.
George W. Bush is just like chilling out on a porch somewhere, and like people go wandering in and out. I'm sure.
Like, in fact, do you mind talking to him when he comes into the hallway?
Just trying to get people off the street. Like,
Hey,
do you guys know I had an institute? I have one. I'm going to make a library too. It's going to be great.
Okay. That's fine.
Obama literally left office and he's like, how can I continue using the power of what I am doing to do the things I want to do in the world?
Right.
You know, he's like, really, he's got his communication strategy. He's got his policy strategy. He's thinking about it in such a focused way. George W. Bush left office and he was like, I'm done. I'm not doing any of it. I'll do the library, but like, I'm gone. I'm taking a bath, you know? Yeah.
It's like, oh, wait, you're not going to direct any more movies? Like, I only did it because my dad's Michael Ovitz, and I don't want to do it anymore. Like, it's like that same, like, where nepotism's like, yeah, got me in the door. I don't even really know if I wanted to do this. That's why you don't really see me engaging with it after the fact. Plus, I'm haunted by all the dark shit I had to do. And maybe that's my karma. I don't know. Hey, Ellen, check out my watch. Is this cool?
Yeah.
What a life. And yeah, does Jenna Bush still call dad? I don't know.
A friend of mine in college pointed out to me once, this is during the George W. Bush administration, but they were like, at one point, George W. Bush was like part owner of the Texas Rangers, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend was like, you know, George W. Bush is an alternate universe where he just becomes the commissioner of baseball. And he would be such a good commissioner of baseball. He would get to make jokes. You know what I mean? Go to baseball games. Mm-hmm. Don't we all want to live in that universe? Like, oh, that'd be something he'd be good at.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people.
Right. And Donald Trump is just a Bitcoin bro. Like, I love that universe. That would have been the fucking perfect one.
Everyone should ape in, drink the slurp juice.
Get your slurp juice. And yeah, some people pointed out maybe it's neo-Nazi semiotics. Who knows? I mean, yeah, it is. Let's be real. I'm not dumb. You know what time it is. I'm trying to mainstream white supremacy. All right, I'll be right back. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk about the strength of video games.
Yeah. Mm.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
And we're back. Video games have been very important for me throughout my life. Adam, I know they're a huge part for you. Matt, are you a big, were you a big child of the game?
I played video games when I played PC games when I was in high school and college, and now I play PS4.
There you go.
I love video games. I love them. They're great.
Adam?
I play everything, man. I play all the time. I'm still working through Elden Ring, which is enormously long. But yeah, I mean, I follow video games more closely than I follow anything else. I listen to, probably spend more time listening to podcasts about video games than I do playing them. But, you know, I've started collecting retro video games. I got a fucking CRT monitor in here. So I play old
Race Theory monitor. Okay. I didn't know they made the Critical Race Theory monitors.
Yeah.
You turn it on and it's like
whiteness is false. Whiteness does not exist. It doesn't display white at all. It
just shades of gray. I don't know if I definitely heard this growing up in the, you know, being born in the 80s and in the early 90s of always from my mom and like grandparents being like, don't look at the TV. It's going to rot your brain. You're playing video games all the time. It's going to rot your brain. Why are you playing Super Nintendo? Why are you playing Mario Paint? I'm like, because this shit is dope. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it came with a mouse that I plug into my Super Nintendo. Fuck with me.
Mario Paint's incredible.
But oh yeah, I mean,
Mario taught me typing.
Thank you.
Do you guys ever do Mario teaches typing?
I had that on my Mac when I in like 1993. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Okay.
Not an official Nintendo release, so I kind of object to it, but yeah.
Okay, got you.
It's not canon.
Yeah. Bunk licensing deal. But yeah, I think for a while, that was like sort of like the accepted thing that parents would get really sort of nervous about. Like,
right.
Too much video games is actually bad for you. Yeah. Well, guess what? The Karolinska Institutet in Sweden has conducted a pretty lengthy study on thousands of kids in the U.S. to see how playing video games affected their intelligence. In this case, they're just their general cognitive abilities, not like did their vocabulary expand or whatever, just testing their general cognitive abilities. So they looked at 9,000 kids aged 9 and 10 and had them do a battery of tests just to sort of set a baseline. Then they followed up with about 5,000 of these kids about 2 years later to run the tests again and to see if there were any differences that they could find. And here's something they found. Quote, on average, the children spent 2.5 hours a day watching TV, half an hour on social media, and 1 hour playing video games. The results showed that those who played more games than the average increased their intelligence between the two measurements by approximately 2.5 IQ points more than the average. No significant effect was observed, positive or negative, of TV watching or social media. Mm. So they said, okay, that tracks because TV, social media seems pretty passive. Now, not to say who knows the toll that takes on someone's emotional well-being, because they do say, look, we were not checking for the effects of things like on things like physical activity, sleep, well-being, or school performance.
Right.
Very narrowly on their cognitive ability. But the results seem to be in line or are in line with other studies that claim that screen time doesn't impair children's cognitive abilities. And in fact, gaming can help it boost those things.
I have a theory about this study.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But first of all, it comports with my own experience, because one thing that I read years and years ago is that the main thing video games help you do is that they teach you how to navigate human designed software systems. Right. So when you play a video game, right, if you're used to playing a video game, you don't generally need to read an instruction manual, right? You can turn the game on if you've played them a lot and you're like, okay, what are the verbs that the game designer gave me? How can I use them? And then, you know, you're in a level and you're like, the game seems like it wants me to go this way, right?
Right.
Like you start to understand this is a whole playground that someone has created for my benefit. Here's the goal. And so I can poke around and figure out how I'm supposed to achieve the goal, right? Oh, there's two paths. One of them probably leads to a treasure chest. The other one probably takes me towards the final boss. And that's the critical path. You have to understand things like that, right?
Right.
And so the theory that I read years ago was that that makes children less intimidated by technology generally, right? And I experienced that myself. Like the reason I'm working in comedy today is because when I was in college, I taught myself Photoshop and I taught myself video editing on Final Cut Pro. And I was in a college sketch group and I became the post-production guy, you know, who did all the video editing. And I just taught myself video editing by like, all right, let me pop open the Final Cut and like start rooting around those menus. What does this menu do? What does that control panel do? Like, I'm not scared of it. I don't need someone to teach me how to do it. I can just sort of figure it out. I read the manual too, but you know, so it gives you that sort of fluency, and that's something that like comes in really handy in America nowadays. And especially, I bet that helps you do better on an IQ test. Now, IQ tests are bullshit. I did a whole segment about them on Adam Ruins Everything. They don't measure, you know, any sort of like, you shouldn't take them as an objective measure of intelligence. They're measuring how well you do on that particular test, but they're not measuring like anything inherent about you. However, I have taken one recently, and it's a whole lot of like, how quickly can you fit the, you know, can you like, what are they called? Tangrams or tessellations or something, where you fit like the little polygon pieces like into a square.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. How well can you remember numbers backwards? Things like that. And like, if you've played a lot of video games, it's very video gamey stuff. You're like, oh, okay, this is what it's trying to get me to do. This is the challenging part. I can, if I focus on this, I should be able to, you know, do better on it.
Oh,
so I really enjoyed doing the IQ test for the same reason I like playing video games. Yeah. And so I feel like this is, I feel like it's not making you more intelligent, but I bet it does make you, if you play a lot of video games, I bet you do better on an IQ test.
I think it's more like in line with playing an instrument, right? That you grow up playing an instrument, you're just developing different skills than if you weren't. Like with music, there's timing, your hand-eye coordination to read music, to know music theory, and like the relationship between notes and things like that help a lot. And I even subtly, right? I just noticed for me, like I'm also Japanese. So growing up in the U.S., my Japanese education mostly came from my mom speaking to me, and mostly only speaking to me in Japanese to build my ability to speak two languages. Reading was a little bit different because when I turn the TV on, it's always English. And like I would have to seek out Japanese material to begin reading. When Game Boy came around, I was playing Japanese Game Boy games. So many, you know, because back in those days, like there was no spoken audio dialogue that played out of the TV. It was all text. You had to read and hit A to continue the fucking dialogue.
Right.
And that very quickly got me to begin reading Japanese at a much quicker pace than I did if I was like using a book or whatever, because I was so inherently, rather than being like, I don't know what this says or whatever, I was like, fuck it. Through the repetition of trying to read this over and over, it gave me those skills. So there's these little things that you do pick up. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily the secret to having super brain, but we can all connect these little dots to little things that we picked up or skills we picked up.
I'm so jealous of you for having that childhood experience with Japanese, because I mean, obviously I grew up like so many American kids did with Japanese imported culture being, you know, just like video games were like the entry point. And then also, you know, anime and everything else. But like, God, to have had the ability to play Japanese video games growing up, like, oh,
it also made me an insufferable prick, because I was like, y'all are late to Pokemon. Y'all are late to Power Rangers. Y'all are late to this. And I'm like, I'm on to the next shit.
Y'all are late to hentai. Y'all are late. Yeah.
Y'all are late to so many.
I've been watching women have sex with octopuses.
Exactly. Oh, also, y'all are late for old enough too. That shit is old as fuck.
Yeah.
Seen them kids do them chores decades ago. Kids are fucking 40 now. Fuck out of here. But yeah, it is like an interesting thing that video games also were like a motivating force for me, because my mom insisted, or my parents are like, you gotta focus on studying. I'm like, I'm doing fine in school. If I can do fine in school, let me play video games. And that's all I want. Like my parents wouldn't never buy me video games. Like, and they only came around every report card. If I had straight A's, then they're like, fuck it, fine. You could have one game. You could go rent a game. And that sort of feedback loop was sort of my way of being like, oh, I'm getting this fucking game. The Die Hard trilogy just came out on PlayStation. Watch me murk my fucking tests. And so, you know, there was a bit of a...
Wait, that's the game you wanted to play? Die Hard trilogy? I've never even
trilogy,
heard of that.
It was so bad. Oh, man. It was like a three-part game that was like a multi-genre game where the first level is like a shooter. And then I think the first two levels are like shooter games, like sort of like Area 51 style shooters.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Die Hard with a Vengeance like node within the trilogy game was like a crazy taxi kind of thing where you were like driving around New York Exactly. And like the worst Sam Jackson voice act, like mm-hmm. actor is like, you know, saying all kinds of wild shit. But I remember at the time I loved Die Hard with a Vengeance. So I was like,
sure,
yo, I need this game. Need this game.
Yeah.
And it was terrible.
That's how I know who Chester A. Arthur was and what president. Yeah. He's 21st president of the United States.
Exactly.
Learn that from Die Hard movies. Let me offer a cautionary tale for any parents or future parents out there who are like, video games are bad, TV is bad, it's all going to rot my kid's brain. My parents took out our TVs when I was in fifth grade because my brother started getting bad grades, and my grades also and my sister's grades were starting to suffer a little bit. We had no TV from fifth grade until 11th grade, until 9/11. 9/11 was the day we got our TVs back.
Wow.
Because 9/11 had happened and my parents wanted to watch it. So sad day for America, good day for the Lieb family. But in that intervening time, I didn't get to play video games. I didn't get to watch. I had to go to other friends' houses to like fucking watch, you know, TV and shit. I came to everything late. And I will say what instead happened is I just discovered drugs. And started in like sixth grade, I started smoking weed, you know, I started doing harder stuff a little bit later
the grade
on.
After the TV was gone?
TV like was gone. It. And I was like, well, cause so what's left to do? And I was like, I'll just hang out with, you know, friends. And a lot of times those friends had weed. So we started smoking it. And I'm just saying, I think that more harm was done to me by not having TV and video games in my life than when we actually, you know, then yeah. So I'm just saying,
sure.
The TV made me, I think, you know, not as dumb as the drugs made me. So
yeah.
Keep that in mind, everybody.
I mean, and look, you knew who the 21st president was, not because of school.
Exactly.
But because of that actor who played that trucker. Yes. In Die Hard with a Vengeance.
That's right. I know who Chester A. Arthur is because of TV. Keep the or TVs even, in.
What about the little gallon jug challenge that Simon had him do in Central Park with the filling up the water jugs? I was playing along with them, being
me
like,
too.
How do they get that? And then boom.
I learned all sorts of shit.
Can we also say the most popular games for kids right now, right? Mm-hmm. Let's go through what they are. Minecraft. Right. Yeah. Incredibly wholesome. Biggest video game of all time, Minecraft. Incredibly wholesome. It's fucking Legos. It's like the best thing ever. It is it and you play it with your friends, you build a world together. It's unbelievable. Minecraft. Fortnite, another game about building, full of secrets, right? That Fortnite has so many secrets basically designed for you to talk about with your friends, and kids play it with each other. It's a social game, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Among Us was another huge game with kids. Intensely social, right?
Right. All and about, it's learning how to like figure out which one's the alien, which is something I think we all need to be able to do.
Yeah, you need to find the liars in your life.
Exactly. You and find it teaches and you how to do that. Isolate all of the liars and snitches.
Right, exactly. So when I get a fundraising text from Nancy Pelosi, I'm like, this is sus. Shit is sus.
And none of those games, by the way.
How does $14 help you codify Roe? Please help me understand that. And even if you played video games, you're like, I don't understand. If I pay the $14, do I get the codified Roe power up?
Yeah.
I don't?
No, you get a banana suit.
Oh. Yeah, good enough.
Yeah.
Here's some poster board. And also, don't forget, and here's a mail-in ballot. Don't forget us in November. Okay. All right. Well, Adam, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Of course.
It's always a pleasure speaking with you. And I'm glad you were finally able to stop by because... You know, we see each other in real life constantly.
Yeah.
So this is a great moment to bring it all together.
It was wonderful to be here. The new show is called The G Word. Can I just give a proper plug?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now. I said, where do people find you, follow you? Where do they see you? And also tell us the tweets you like.
So the new show is called The G Word. It's all about the federal government. 6 episodes. They are on Netflix right now. Please watch them. Just so you know, if you want to support a show, best thing to do on Netflix is watch all of it as fast as you can. If you watch, just even if you don't watch the last 2 episodes, just fucking hit play and let them just finish, because then I get Netflix points. Basically, that's what they want to see is people finish the show. So please watch it. If you want to watch my old show, Adam Ruins Everything, which I'm very proud of, it's all available on HBO Max. All 65 episodes are available there. I do a podcast called Factually, where every week I interview a different fascinating expert about all the shit that they know that I don't know and that you might not know. We have some of the best nonfiction writers, journalists, incredible people on. I break down all of their incredible research in a really digestible way, make it really funny. Really proud of that show. Comes out every single week. It's called Factually. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts. And I'm at Adam Conover, wherever. Follow me on TikTok. I post funny informational videos on TikTok basically daily. So
there it is. There it is. Wait, do you have any like works of Twitter that you liked recently?
Oh my God. My own or other people's?
Anyone. You know,
I want to talk about my own. Is that okay? I had the most viral thread I ever did on Twitter recently.
Okay. And
it was about Rick Caruso running for mayor of Los Angeles.
What does he do? The Americana and the Grove.
He gave us that. And he's Mr. Private Property over everything.
Yeah. So this guy is a real quick. This guy's a billionaire real estate developer. He's running for the mayor of Los Angeles. He's flooding the town with ads. You can't watch a Dodgers game or any other, you know, can't watch Jeopardy without seeing like tons of these ads. He looks so kindly in the ads. But he is a fucking right-wing Republican, and he's going like, I'm Rick Caruso, I love L.A., and I want to clean up L.A. Now, that sounds really good if you don't know much, but if you know the history of right-wing politics in California, you should be pretty scared of the phrase clean up L.A. This guy's anti-abortion. He's donated like hundreds of thousands of dollars to Mitch McConnell and shit, and his homelessness strategy is building like gigantic warehouses to like force all the homeless people into rather than building like permanent housing and like working with people one by one. He wants to like, he's like literally his homelessness plan is build a, you can look at on his website. This is what it says. He wants to build a gigantic shelter out in Palmdale and like fucking force people like way out in the middle of the desert.
Yeah,
horrible dude. He spent $30 million so far on ads. And what people don't realize is he could win the election in June because if he wins, because of LA's weird rules, if he wins over 50% in the primary, he goes straight to the office. He skips the general. So it's really important people vote for anybody but Caruso. I'm sorry, I know you don't, I don't even do political shit like this that often, but this guy is.
Well, you
really
do in LA. I mean, we know you and your vote. I mean, if you're in LA politics, we know you're pretty vocal about LA politics.
Yeah.
So we know.
Yeah, I am. And that's, by the way, part of what we talk about on the G word, local politics, you can have so much more impact than on national politics. I just ignore Nancy Pelosi and I focus local. So anyway, I did a tweet thread about this guy, most viral tweet thread I've ever done. And so that's my favorite tweet lately is me trying to get the word out about this motherfucker who we got to stop.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, like, don't forget, like many of the land developers in the city of Los Angeles, they usually end up becoming the commissioner of the L.A. Police Commission.
So. Yeah, this guy's the commissioner of the L.A. Police Department. But by the way, also, why do we have homelessness? The housing crisis. Why do we have a housing crisis? Housing has gotten so expensive. This guy's a luxury real estate developer. Mm-hmm. Why would we elect the dude who caused the problem to solve the problem?
That's not the problem.
Because he makes malls with choo-choo trains.
Yeah.
I like malls with choo-choo train. Turn LA to mall with choo-choo train. That's what I
want. I want Katsuya near me now.
Look, I go to the Americana and I go there to see movies at the AMC.
Yeah.
Shitty fucking projection. The movies look terrible at that movie theater.
The food sucks.
The food sucks. That's Rick Caruso's fault. All right.
Yeah.
So don't get, if you want a Cinnabon, you can go give him money if you like, but don't, for the love of God, don't vote for him for mayor.
Please don't.
No, please don't. Matt, what about you, man? Where can people find you, follow you, and check you out?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram. Twitter at Matt Lieb, Instagram at Matt Lieb Jokes. And you can please listen to my Sopranos Rewatch podcast, Pod Yourself a Gun, the world's only Sopranos podcast. This is our last season. And not only do we just watch the episode and talk about it, but I do parody songs. Basically, I just take a song and I do the synopsis of the Sopranos episode in the style of that song. It sounds lame, I know, but it's actually great. And Miles has been on. He had a great time.
Anna's been on. Jack's been on.
I mean, just like Jack was on. Yeah. The whole Zeit crew has been on. So check it out before we finish. And Pod Yourself a Gun and Frogcast, which is our regular podcast in which we talk about movies.
tweet you like? What are you liking on the Twitters?
I really liked this from Crotto Soprano at Uncle June. He wrote, Ezra Miller is the Ralph Cifaretto of Hawaii, which I which I really liked. Just, you know, Ralph Cifaretto on The Sopranos, he was just kind of a wild card. He would just do random acts of violence and kind of laugh about it. And like gleeful random acts of violence seems to be Ezra Miller's thing now. So,
yeah. Let's see. A tweet that I like is from Sean Johnson at Sex with Your Uncle.
Okay, cool. That's a great handle.
Well, you are for your tweeted. Imagine if Oasis said basketball instead of Wonderwall. I think that would be cool. So stupid. And James Hamblin at James Hamblin tweeted, before you criticize Elon Musk's politics, remember, he's the reason we have the Hyperloop train that gets you from LA to San Francisco in 1 hour. Find me at Miles of Gray on Twitter and Instagram. Also check out the new basketball podcast, Mad Boosties. We had Robert Ori on this latest episode.
My
Laker heart imploded into itself, and I couldn't stop like asking so many dumb questions.
That's amazing.
Oh, and he's the nicest. He's the nicest man.
I love the nicest man.
Oh. I'm going to tell you more about it after this. And also check out 420 Day Fiance if you're into 90 Day. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We got a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. There it is.
Thank you. I did it.
Came through. Where we post, obviously, all the articles we talk about, as well as the songs that we write out on. This week, we are writing out on this track called Golden Green by this artist, Emma Jean Thackray, T-H-A-C-K-R-A-Y. She's a multi-instrumentalist, vocalist, which I love. I love when people are like, you know, one-person bands and they have such a dope sound. This is one, like, if you like Bad, Bad, Not Good, you know, and you like kind of like that newer new jazz kind of style, but also, you know, you like a little hip hop in your life or something that feels like it would have been sampled by Mobb Deep, then check out her work because it's really, really good. And it's all coming from Emma Jean. So check that out. So check that song out, right out on that. And we'll see you later to tell you what's trending. Until then, bye.
Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.